Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. I'm reading all the comments people are writing on all my channels and will respond to some of them in future videos. I will take some of the best comments and put them on my website at historyreviewed.com. My video platform is now up, which means that you can view non-YouTube videos on my website. Videos which have been banned from YouTube can be viewed there. A lot of my videos have been banned in Europe. There is an agenda to stop white people in Europe from hearing the truth. Lots of my videos are banned in France, Germany, Italy, Poland, Switzerland, and the Czech Republic. The total population of these countries is 260 million. Europeans are welcome to come to my historyreviewed.com website to view the videos which have been blocked from viewing. You will find the link to my website and to my banned videos in the description below the video. There are also links to my website where you can subscribe and donate. I'm looking for subscribers who are willing to subscribe to my channel for $5 per month. Thank you very much. There are some, let's call it, philosophical and spiritual quests which we have to get into. And in this regard, I did say that we're going to do Nietzsche. And Nietzsche definitely has to be done. And I've already gone through a large chunk of Nietzsche's material. And I want to get that series going as well. And somebody asked me to number it. So I'll do that. And Nietzsche's extremely interesting, I must tell you. But in this video, we're not going to touch on Nietzsche. But a lot of things start coming together when you start looking at different lines of thinking. Now, in my communications with people, I've been saying to people that whites must learn to work together. That rule number one is that we are white, and that is the most important rule of all. And our race must take precedence over everything else. It is not acceptable for us to die out. This is just plainly unacceptable. I've always been against the notion of suicide. When I was in my teens and Rhodesia was starting to fall apart and I left for South Africa and my father died, I found myself alone in another country just trying to find my way through life. It was in those days that I was the most suicidal in all of my life. I truly wondered whether there was any kind of future at all, and whether we would be finished off, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do, and for me, just trying to feed myself and just keep myself going, and trying to find a career even, when I had nothing but a high school education. And in that sense, I was actually strictly a high school dropout. I didn't do my last year of school. So whereas other kids went on to university, I was sort of floundering around in another country, in the South African Navy initially, trying to find my place and trying to see what can I do and how am I going to move forward. And that was the beginning of my struggle. And then I also had to start looking after certain members of my family, which added another load on. So in those days, I wasn't the positive person that I am now. In those days, I was struggling a lot mentally, and I needed to cling to things. I needed to cling to some sort of religion. And the religion that I clung to was a type of Buddhist thing, and that worked best for me. Christianity was something I had a flirtation with in my teens, and I was only strictly speaking a Christian for about a year, and there were too many things that didn't work for me. There were too many things when I started reading the Bible seriously, and I was young, I was about 12 to 13 when I was going through this phase, and I was starting to read, and I would read this and read that, and I was struggling to make sense of it, and that turned me off. And that sent me off on another mission to start finding other things. And I started with spiritualism, and eventually I settled on this type of Buddhism that had been popularized by one of these fake preachers. And later I realized the guy's just a fake and a liar, and he's just come up with his nonsense. And he wrote about 20 books. He was very successful. And his name was Lobsang Rampa. And I was a huge disciple of Lobsang Rampa, most of my life, in fact. And I wanted to prove to people that this guy knew what he was talking about. But much later, I had to admit, it was all just a load of rubbish. Now, you get many people who are atheists. And the atheists say, like Alex Linder says, why do you need religion? There's no need for religion. And they look on religion as related to God. And that is how they view it. So the only religion that they know of is religion that is related somehow to God or something spiritual. And they say, well, if God doesn't exist, then that's the end of religion. Then that's where religion dies. And we're going to come back to this with Nietzsche. Nietzsche's fascinating. He's been fascinating the hell out of me. And we're going to tackle him. But I have a reason why I want to tackle this now. Is I'm going to jump between these different things as I'm working on stuff. So we'll jump around a little bit and you'll start seeing things come together. Now what we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about the Church of Creativity. This is a thing founded by a guy called Ben Klassen. And it's this church that I have grown to like. There are a bunch of very interesting things in here. And what I've been trying to tell whites is that whether you are atheist or pagan or Christian, you should start looking at other things that other whites are doing that you're not familiar with. So if you're an atheist, you might want to go dig into something else. If you're a Christian, you should also open your mind and go and have a look and see what are the pagans saying, what are the atheists saying. Because the key thing here is that white people must interact with other white people. Because that interaction will be at other people on a similar level as you. So there's no need to go and worry about Tibet or something like that. Find out what other white people are thinking and why. Why? And we need to dig into lots of things, including some of our history, including the whole issue of how was it that Christianity came to arise as the religion of our entire race? What was it that made Christianity the religion of our entire race? And it's something I've also been digging into. There are all kinds of strange things I've been looking at. And I've been coming across some really, really interesting information. And it begs so many questions. Because the reason we're sitting in the situation we're in is largely due, and most white nationalists will say so, they'll say it's largely due to the fact that we are suicidal. There's something wrong in our thinking. And there are many who blame Christianity directly. And they say Christianity is what has brought weakness to our race. And this weakness needs to be countered. Now, returning to suicide. So when I was young, I was feeling very suicidal. When I was young, when I was in my teens, late teens, early 20s, I was feeling quite suicidal. But then this wore off me. And as I grew older, this became something that bothered me less and less. And the other thing closely associated with that was depression. And that also faded away more and more as I grew older. So young people, my advice to young people who are depressed is just never act on that impulse, no matter how you feel about it. Never act on the impulse of suicide. There are too many white people who've committed suicide. It's terrible, terrible. It's unbelievably tragic. Never do that. And whatever you feel at the moment, just get through it and just keep carrying on. You will get stronger with time. So you must never act on those things. And I've known quite a number of people who committed suicide. There was one cousin of mine. She was a very beautiful woman. She was probably the most beautiful woman in our family. And this cousin of mine was this beautiful blonde. And we used to visit her and her husband in Salisbury, which was the capital of Rhodesia. And everything seemed so perfect. She had a husband. She had two little boys. Everyone seemed so happy. And then, of course, with the collapse of Rhodesia, they also ended up coming to South Africa. But her husband had a good job, and he got a house for them, and they were living here in Johannesburg. And I heard later that she committed suicide. She went and she gassed herself in her motor car, and one of her little boys came and found his mom dead in the car. So that is very tragic. And there were a couple of other suicides that I know about from the distant past, but not related to these particular problems. And my mom and I could never understand why she'd committed suicide. She had such a good husband. He always looked after her. And why did this beautiful woman now commit suicide? What was it that drove her over the edge? And I think also, I think they were very Christian, I think. Seem to recall something like that. And now that I'm older, I find these things extremely tragic. I worked with a young white guy who was a Jehovah's Witness. And he had a nice little BMW car. He always looked very neat. He would be very pleasant. He was rather introverted. And being a Jehovah's Witness, that made life difficult for him. It put all kinds of conditions on his life. And one of those had to do with marriage and finding another girl who was the same. So he had all these kinds of stresses. But he was a very pleasant guy and very ingenious. He once showed me that he'd designed his own engine. He designed an engine and he showed me the actual graphics of how this engine would work. It's a different kind of engine, motor car or other engine. And he was clever. He taught me stuff. I learned some electrical and electronic things from him. He gave me some advice and we worked together. And we worked together maybe about 12 or 13 years ago. And then a couple of years after that, I heard from a friend of his, a young woman that I knew, that he had committed suicide. And he'd done it also very neatly. He'd gone and set everything up. He'd left notes for everybody. He'd actually gassed himself. I think he gassed himself in his house. I think. Can't remember exactly. But everything was done so neatly, so carefully. Notes were left for everybody. Everything was in its place. And he killed himself. Here's a white guy who killed himself. And yeah, these are the kinds of disgusting things that happen. And I hate suicide. And nowadays I hate it even more. Whenever somebody's suicidal, try and talk them out of it. Do anything. Try and do anything to get them out of it. And tell them they must learn to carry on. And life does get easier. It's not necessarily that life gets easier, but you get tougher. Life will make you tougher. It will make everybody tougher, I assure you. And this is an important thing. Adolf Hitler also addressed this issue and knew about this issue. And he said something like, "He who wishes to live, let him fight." Because Adolf Hitler said, in this world, this is a world of eternal struggle. And that is like a law of nature. And that's what we're going to get into, is the laws of nature and the notion that struggle is part of life. We didn't invent this world. We don't know how this universe came into being. There are the religious people who say that it came into being because of God. I never rule out the possibility that there are higher intelligences that could be at work, because I also find it very amazing that all these things happened and that it could have happened by accident. And that is actually an argument that Adolf Hitler made to Leon Degrelle. But that doesn't mean to say that because you think like that, that there may be a higher intelligence, that necessarily this means that the Bible is true. Okay? Those two things do not follow. You can believe in a higher intelligence without believing in anybody's book. You can believe in God without ever going to church. You can believe in higher intelligence or intelligent design. You can believe in any of these things, and that still does not mean that what is in the Bible is necessarily true, or what is in the Old Testament is necessarily true. Those things do not necessarily follow from each other. So, however things came into being, the fact of the matter is, we just don't know why we're here, and we don't know even a fraction of what's out there. All that we know is that the more we look and dig, the more amazing things become. Whether we look into the microscopic level, or whether we look up into the sky, and whether we are able to discover new galaxies, and whatever it is we discover. I used to love astronomy a lot. And the more they discover, the weirder it gets. It's just astounding. And the same is true at the microscopic level, at the atomic level. Things just get so bizarre. Quantum theory, for example, is awesome. It's like freaking magic. It's like magic. It's beyond magic. And yet this is how things actually work. So it's not like we are anywhere close to answers. And the more we discover, the weirder things are. We still don't have answers to the original questions. We don't know why we're here. But the fact is that we are here. And the big thing nowadays is this whole business that we are in the process of being exterminated. White genocide, we're dying out, we're going downhill. In the days when I chatted to my Jewish pal, and we spoke about Europe, he said to me, there's not much going on in Europe. Europe, there's no hope. And I said to him, why is there no hope in Europe? He said, well, it's an old culture, and therefore it's dying now. And I thought about it, and it sounded very depressing to me. But then again, everything I discussed with him ended up being depressing. However, the only time he would not be depressing was when he was saying something like, oh, look how great China is. China's awesome. And I'd say to him, really? Is China that awesome? I don't think they're that awesome. I don't even think they were that awesome in history. Then he'd say, oh, but they're an old culture and they are so civilized and blah. So he uses the same argument in completely opposite directions. He says, yeah, Europe is dying because it's an old culture. But, oh, yes, China is rocking also because it's an old culture. Yeah. But the big thing that we have is this blackness, this negativity surrounding white people. And this negativity is very bad. This is killing us. It's sapping us of our strength. So the big thing is this terrible negativity that grasps white people, and that's making it's almost like a paralyzing fear. One of my regular followers on this channel, one of the South Africans, he talks about this paralyzing fear. This is a thing that grips many of the whites here in South Africa, especially the right-wingers. They get gripped by this paralyzing fear. And that is what is gripping a lot of white people, is this paralyzing fear that they are so afraid. It's as if everything is destroying us. And it doesn't matter whether we move backwards or forwards or left or right. We just keep on losing and we don't understand why. But I think I have a better grasp of why. And part of it is just that it's enemy propaganda. And the other one is traitors and the fact that many, if not most of our enemies are actually sitting at very high levels where they can see us and they get statistics and information about us and they can see when we're doing something that's going to work for us and they can come and trip it up. The topic of traitors, white traitors, is a very important topic that has to be visited. Because this, I must tell you, is something that's going to have to come into play at some point in the future. White traitors are not a topic to be taken lightly. And it's not something that we must tolerate. Once I got out of my 20s, then I began to start having more fight and will to live. Then I stopped thinking about suicide and I became ever more determined. And that has helped me throughout my life. And as I've grown older, I've grown to have this view more and more. And guys like Adolf Hitler and the Germans, they absolutely embodied this will to live. I want to read to you a little bit from page 37 of my book, Government by Deception, because I've been trying to find two things, and for the life of me, I can't find the two things I want. The one is something I wrote, and the other one is something Ben Clausen of the Church of Creativity, something he wrote. Now, somewhere in my book, I'm quite convinced I wrote and said that I'm not interested in what the blacks do in Africa. If the blacks commit suicide, that doesn't concern me. I have every intention of living despite what they do. I said something along those lines somewhere in my book, Government by Deception. But unfortunately, I looked in certain places and couldn't find it. But I do want to read to you a little bit because some of this has to do with the killing of white people. Because when I wrote my book, Government by Deception, in 2001, I was trying to give a warning to the whites of South Africa. I wanted the whites, especially the Boers, to know that we are heading into deep, deep trouble. We are heading down a path that is really bad. I wrote my book in 2001 and Black Rule came in 1994. So the blacks had only ruled the country for about 7 years when I started writing this thing. And the immediate response I got from white people, especially liberals and Jewish people, they came at me. They hated what I was putting out on the internet. But I was trying to explain to the whites that despite what's coming at us, this is not the end of the world. So I wrote this. To be frank, from a Western perspective, Southern African politics is a mess. To me, this is very sad. This could seal the fate of Southern Africa, which is the richest and most developed part of Africa. As it is, Africa has been struggling to find itself since throwing off the shackles of colonialism. Marxism is definitely a path leading in the wrong direction. Socialist economics does not work. It doesn't work in the First World, and it most definitely does not work in the Third World. See, back then I was thinking like a conservative, but even so I managed to put some racial truths in and to mention some facts. So I continue. But this is not the end of history. And let me pause there. For the Rhodesians, for them, the loss of Rhodesia and turning it into Zimbabwe, that was the end. They really didn't see any chance of a future or hope or any way of turning anything around ever. And many of the whites in South Africa still think like that. So I was trying to say to them, look, things are going to get very nasty, but it's not the end. It's not the end. This is not the end of history. So I wrote, but this is not the end of history. The breaking of white political and military power in Southern Africa was only the first of many steps. It appears to me as if a number of bigger problems are appearing on the African horizon. Among these is more economic collapse and more war. I believe the governments of South Africa and Zimbabwe are part of a much bigger Marxist brotherhood which wishes to spread its influence right across Africa. I believe these countries have been and will continue to work towards propping up Marxist regimes while trying to topple those who are pro-Western. Now listen to this. A while back, I had a discussion with a radical African-American woman via email. She was a supporter of the radical African-American Louis Farrakhan. She told me that she hoped all the white people in the world would be killed one day so that black people could live in peace in a black paradise. I am sure many black people in Africa and many people around the world imagine that if all us whites in Africa were killed, that black Africans would live together happily in peace. If I truly believed that whites were a blight upon the face of the African continent, then I would be among the first to volunteer to be exterminated. But I have lived in Africa long enough to doubt the validity of this assertion. I do not believe that the eradication of white colonial power will be the cure-all for Africa's problems. In fact, I believe the removal of the white man as the, quotes, common enemy will only serve to revive old rivalries and old hatreds. I also believe new hatreds will blossom as powerful and ambitious black men like Mugabe, Mbeki and others attempt to use force to get influence across this continent. It is my belief that wars such as the one we saw in the DRC are just the beginning of a new trend in Africa. If you think the suffering of Africa is over, then just sit back and watch what happens on this continent in the years to come. I believe the worst is yet to come. And so that is what I was saying almost 17 years ago, that I did not believe killing all the whites of Africa would solve Africa's problems. And that whole business of killing us, that is what our enemies and the commies and the liberals have been advocating here in Africa. But nowadays, it's not just the whites of Africa that are in trouble, it's whites everywhere that are in trouble. So we've had this sword hanging over our head for longer than the rest of you. And the sword that's been hanging over our head has been one that has been truly scary, because with our small numbers and our small influence in the world, the question has been, is it possible for us to survive? And most of us have concluded over here that it's literally impossible. But I've always maintained and believed that if you push back and you start standing up for yourself, that is the moment when hope is born. And in my book, I had a chapter called The White's Last Stand. And it was all about our nightmare, the worst nightmare we could possibly have here. All-out war where everybody comes at us to freaking kill us. And I wrote about that, and I believed we could survive it. And I still believe we can survive it. And I still believe all of us can survive all of this nonsense that's coming at us. and that a large part of this negativity is merely stuff that's come in through the mind. And the more I observe white people, the more I've come to the conclusion that the real chains that bind white people down, the real chains that bind us down and stop us from doing anything, those chains are all in our minds. They are almost exclusively in our minds. These are not actual physical facts. Now, even back then, I always looked on history as my teacher. And in one of my videos, I mentioned that Adolf Hitler wrote the same thing. Adolf Hitler in Mein Kampf wrote that, "I do not learn history, I let history teach me." And I used history to teach myself. And when I looked at history, I said to myself, but look at this and this and that and those things that happened there. And, you know, look at what white people did there and look at what white people did there. And look at that age in that time and the white people there were facing that. Look at what they did there. Look at those achievements. And I would just look at all the achievements of our race, all the things we overcame, endless lists of things that we overcame. All kinds of problems, all kinds of terrible things, the courage that was shown, the inventiveness that was shown. All these things were solved by white people. And hundreds of years ago, when all the other races were sitting in their continents and places where they lived, and at most, they would be sending out some fishing vessels, or at most, their sailing ships would hug the coastline a bit. Whites had already figured out how to have free energy power with their sailing ships, and then, using their incredible mathematics and engineering, they invented an accurate watch that could keep the time extremely accurately, even as a ship is out at sea, pitching around in the water. And just by using our mathematics and our engineering, that single invention, a watch, that watch with its attendant mathematics suddenly allowed whites to stop doing this coastal hugging stuff and to be able to set out and sail directly across the oceans, straight across oceans, and know where they are and find their place without any problem. It was a huge revolution, and suddenly the whites of Europe were all over the globe. They were everywhere. They went around the world, to the top of the world, to the bottom of the world. They went everywhere. Just through that little bit of careful, precision, white thinking. And you must never, ever underestimate the power of our precision type of thinking. Never belittle this thing. Never. I'm telling you, this is what's going to save our lives. This is what is going to take defeat, going to take suicidal defeat that faces us, and we are going to flip this thing around to absolute victory. When everybody thinks the whites are dead, especially the whites here, when everybody thinks we are as good as freaking dead, you're going to see that precision is going to come back. That is our trick. And when it comes to things like precision, risk, and all that sort of thing, we are the best at that. Now, in the video series that I did, Adolf Hitler, the Messiah, Parts 1 and 2, and the Divine Order, two of those videos were banned off YouTube. You can go and view them on historyreviewed.com. I didn't put those videos back on YouTube. Two of them were banned, and they will be banned again. And the one that wasn't banned, well, I decided to just chuck it all on my website. And you can go and find the whole series there. And on my website, historyreviewed.com, there is a search facility. So when you go there, on the top right is a search, and you can just type in Messiah or something like that, hit the button and you'll see what comes up. So you can find all my stuff that I've already put up there. You'll find it there. I've probably put up about a third, 33 to 40% of my videos are up there already. And if you're finding my channels confusing, don't worry. Just go to my website. You can find all the stuff there. And whenever I post new videos online, they are all listed there. And it starts with the most recent. So if you just go there and you click on videos, you'll see the latest ones. So you don't need to hunt around on YouTube to find my stuff. All the things are there. And the ones that are on YouTube, when you get to them, you can just click on the link and you'll view it on YouTube, wherever it is that I put it. So don't be concerned by that. Now, in Adolf Hitler the Messiah, quite a number of people liked that thing. And, of course, certain of our enemies hated it. Oh, they hated it. But in part one, I did quite a bit of a talk about religion and what religion is, and my views on what religion has become compared to what religion used to be. And I talk about the fact that I look on modern religion, the religions that have become famous, the things like Christianity, Judaism, Islam. I regard these as religions of faith. These are about belief. This is a personal belief. And you may well believe that you have factual reason to believe in those things. And that is your decision. That is your mind at work, and you've reached that conclusion. And that's fine. But there are whites who don't reach that conclusion, who come to other conclusions. And that's what I want to talk to you about. The whites who reached other conclusions and what they looked at. Now, Nietzsche is very interesting because Nietzsche actually fits into the story, because Nietzsche was there in the 1880s. And Nietzsche reached the conclusion in the 1880s that due to evolution being proven, as far as he was concerned, due to evolution, he reckoned that there was enough evidence that religion is dead. I think that most of his thoughts were based on evolution. I think. I'm not 100% sure. So if I'm wrong, you're welcome to tell me. But from what I can see is there's something that drove him. And he came to the conclusion that Christianity from then onwards was going to die. And in fact, he said that Christianity not only is going to die, but it's going to take a long time to die. And that maybe even for centuries, it would continue to exist in various pockets. This was Nietzsche's kind of thinking about Christianity. But back then, Christianity was extremely strong. And Nietzsche had his reasons why he didn't like Christianity. And he thought, of course, like I say, that Christianity will die, because in his view, science had killed Christianity. And Christianity will die. And it's just going to flop around for a time. That time could be centuries, but it will die eventually. That's how he saw it. But he had reasons why he didn't like Christianity. And some of that does pertain to what we're going to talk about here. So let me tell you a little bit about Nietzsche in this regard. Nietzsche referred to what he called the preachers of death. The preachers of death. And he spoke about people who were living coffins. Living coffins. And that was his reference to Christians. He saw Christianity as a religion obsessed with death. And he saw it as being so obsessed with death that they weren't living their lives as living human beings should. He thought of them as living coffins. These people are dragged down by their belief system. He went on further to say that they were slaves, actually. But it's very interesting, this thing of almost this depression coming down on the Christian. The Christian is permanently depressed because his religion makes him depressed. That was how Nietzsche saw Christianity. He did not see Christianity as bringing light, bringing happiness, or anything like that. The first time ever that I came across this kind of notion was a few years ago, about a year or two before I started doing videos. I was chatting to a guy who writes some stuff in America. His name is Mike, and I can't remember his surname now. But Mike is a hardcore National Socialist. So one day I was talking to Mike about paganism versus Christianity. Because the net result of what we were looking at was, we were looking at paganism and what a motivating kind of religion it was. Paganism seemed to motivate people. And we were thinking that Christianity is a big demotivator of people. That was sort of what we were touching on there. And Mike then turned around and said to me, he said, you know what? Paganism celebrated life. Paganism celebrated life. And he thought that this positive aspect of paganism is what made paganism such a strong force. That was my first thought that I ever got from somebody else who gave me a direction regarding non-Christian religions, was that paganism celebrated life. It was alive. It wasn't focusing on death. It was focusing on life and energy. And when I look at Nietzsche and I look at the Church of Creativity, which Ben Klassen created, they are also affirmations of life, not death. They're not concerned about death. They know that you will die. They know that you will die. And Nietzsche has very interesting twists to his thinking. And there's some very, very, very deep things that Nietzsche starts touching on. He does go down that path of when you will die. And I'd say he even encourages you that at the right time, you may have to choose a path that you know will lead to your death, and you must follow that path. That is some of what I pick up. We'll get back to the context of what he's getting at and why he's getting at it. But Nietzsche didn't like this religion that is forever in this cloud of darkness. He did not like this thing. And he detested all sorts of things about Christianity, which he said was killing people. And nowadays, we whites, I mean, we are so freaking despondent, and it's a racial, global, worldwide thing almost now, that whites are just feeling this thing that's sucking the lifeblood out of our veins. And people think there's no hope. And they think there's no hope, even though whites still have such obvious, massive power around the world, that still we have so much clout. There are so many things where we are number one, but we're feeling like we're dead. Now you get guys like Professor MacDonald, who's done excellent work on the Jews and said all sorts of things. But then Professor MacDonald also says that whites are suicidal. So there's this notion that we are so good, we are so giving, that we will just carry on giving things away and we will destroy ourselves, and that this is just some natural psychological tendency among ourselves, which I disagree with. I think we're being led there. We're being led there by leaders who deliberately want us to go down that path. But how we got to that is itself another story to look at. Now, returning to the concept of religion, do we need religion? would we even need a religion at all, especially if there's no God to believe in? You know, what are we going to do with religion at all? And this is where it gets really interesting. You get a guy like Dr. William Pierce, who was a scientist, and Dr. William Pierce also was an atheist. But somewhere along the line, Dr. William Pierce came to realize that we need a religion. I've heard it said by somebody, a Christian claimed that Dr. William Pierce had friendly relations with one of the guys who started the Christian Identity Movement. So I've heard that, but somebody else says to me it's not true. But that is what one Christian said to me. So I don't know if his facts are correct. So I'm going to mention it anyway, because maybe some of you know more and can enlighten me. But one thing Dr. William Pierce did do is that at a point, he went and created a religion. So here's a scientist, a white nationalist, a national socialist, and what he created was called cosmotheist or cosmotheism. So anyway, in 1976, he wrote a thing and he spoke here about cosmotheist ethics. And he says, the personal conduct of those who strive to follow the one path is based on three foundations: knowledge, discipline, and service. First comes knowledge, and then he goes on. So he began finding himself heading down into a religious type of path, a spiritual type of path. I don't know enough about him to know what caused him to go down that path, but that is very important, that even he, as an atheist, started looking at those kinds of things. And I have seen film footage where his church existed and he walks around his church and they are singing hymns, and their hymns are to the greatness and the strength of the white race. It's very interesting. So he actually ends up creating a church, a physical church, and they are singing hymns, but these are not Christian hymns. And they are not worshipping Christians. They are worshipping our race. And that is a very interesting line of thought. Now, my knowledge of him is weak on this regard, so I don't know what led him to eventually come to that conclusion. But sometime before him, in 1973, this guy called Ben Klassen, he founded a religion, and he called it creativity. So if we take a quick look at Wikipedia, it says the following: creativity is a white separatist new religious movement which has been classified as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. It was founded in Lighthouse Point, Florida by Ben Klassen as the Church of the Creator in 1973. The church's worldview is based on the veneration of the white race and the supposed safeguarding of its survival. The Church of the Creator is promoted by two organizations, the Creativity Movement and the Creativity Alliance, also known as the Church of Creativity. The groups have common origins. Now, Ben Klassen had a whole interesting history, which I'm not going to go into, but he was a National Socialist and he had a business, and he began to realize in the 60s that whites are in trouble. And it was Klassen who went straight for this business of creating a religion for whites. So I have read from the White Man's Bible in one of my videos, but there's lots of parts that we can read. So Klassen went and wrote The White Man's Bible, he wrote Nature's Eternal Religion, and he wrote a couple of other books as well, all of them enforcing and adding to this. Now, you'd want to ask yourself, why did Klassen come up with a religion? So we know that Dr. William Pierce came up with a religion, but why did Klassen come up with one? And this is the part that I couldn't find. I read somewhere that Ben Klassen, it's in one of his books, where Ben Klassen said, that every great civilization that's ever existed that has been very successful has always had a religion. Always. No great civilization ever existed that didn't have a religion. They always had a religion that tied them together. And so he decided to create a religion for white people, something that would tie all white people together. And he even defines what white people are. And there are people who come at you and you start nitpicking over, oh, is this person white? Is that person white? And I'm talking now in other ways. For example, I had a guy say to me, well, if you're interested in white people, then you're going to have to exclude the Portuguese. The Portuguese aren't white, he says. And then there are others who've said the same thing about the Greeks. Now, this is where Ben Clausen came into the picture, and he said that all white people, he says he knows all about those different classifications of whites, but our skin color is the key thing here. And those of us who are white, we must forget about all these little differences. We must focus on the fact that we are white people. And another way of knowing, oh, am I white? Well, your enemy will know if you're white or not, okay? If affirmative action is working against you, then you're white, okay? If you're in South Africa, they will tell you your race. You don't have to ask your fellow whites your race. You can go and ask your enemies which one you are. They will tell you very quickly. They will tell you. So when whites start breaking down and nitpicking over things, I assure you, our enemies have no question in their minds as to which of us are white and which are not. So you will find out which one you are. If you think you're borderline, it won't be difficult for you to find out for sure. In South Africa, they will tell you quickly. So Ben Clausen said that all these people together who make up the white race, they must gather together and they must work together. And he decided to come up with the concept that would bind everyone together. And his basic motivation was that it had to do with history. No great civilization ever existed that wasn't bound together by a religion. And in that video of mine, Adolf Hitler the Messiah, there too I discussed these kinds of things. That religion in ancient times, far ancient times, distant ancient times, pre-Christian history, that in there, religion actually was science. That's my view of it, that religion was science, because it started out with the planets, the movements of the planets and the stars, the seasons, the realization that things outside of us, and especially above us, that these things have a physical impact on the world, and that even God, that to ancients, God was the sun. God was the sun. The sun that rises and sets every day. They realized that that thing is the most important thing. Without that thing, we will all die. And that is the most important thing. So those things started out. What we call religion in ancient times was actually science and an attempt to understand science. And that is where a lot of our actual mathematics and stuff comes from. Comes from that realization and the fascination with that. So religion back then, pre-Christian religion back then, had a whole different foundation. It was still a religion, but it was a religion that attempted to explain things. And those gods were all gods who had to do with physical events on the earth. All of those gods, they had to do with earth and wind and sea and that sort of thing, fire, that kind of thing. The gods had real physical characteristics. So the concept of religion and science in ancient times was very intermixed, very interwoven. and it was really a quest for knowledge. And then they also started mixing in various myths and stories into this thing. So ultimately, they were trying to understand the world and the universe in which they lived. That was really what they were trying to do. So things like astronomy and astrology, all of those things come from those ancient times. But now we've had hundreds of years of real scientific progress, and now we find that we need something, that there's something missing. And what I like about Ben Classen, and why I really hold Ben Classen in high regard, is that I think Ben Classen went at this religious angle for whites, and he pulled off a feat, a great feat, all in one shot. He went out there, created the basis of this religion. He founded it based on history and science and knowledge, past knowledge. And he went and he wrote about this thing and he laid down the principles. And everything is clear. He went after this thing and he said, this is what white people must do. And when white people think like this and behave like this, then the end result of it is going to be absolute progress. And it's interesting to see that Dr. William Pierce almost was along a very similar line. And William Pierce also raised issues about Christianity. He also had things about Christianity that he questioned. So I like Ben Classen. I really like Ben Classen a lot. I think he tackled a monumental task, a task that is monumentally difficult. And he tackled it and he just hit this thing and he carried on with this thing and he actually produced something that is very workable and that really hits home to a lot of real issues, very important issues. And he put tremendous amounts of effort into this thing. And you can see that his thinking is just building on the thoughts of Adolf Hitler. He's taking the basic stuff, the basic elements of reality that Adolf Hitler perceived about the world, because remember, Adolf Hitler read a lot. He read masses of stuff. In fact, they say that he read all the books in the library of Linz. And Adolf Hitler was very knowledgeable about almost everything. And all that Ben Classen has done is he's taken the basic concepts, the National Socialism and the basic concepts, the basic historical facts, because Hitler was basing his actions on past history as well as modern science, like racial science. So Ben Classen took all these things, expanded it more, clarified it more, and turned it into an actual series of works that people could study. And so this is creativity, or the church of the creator. And you will find this word creator coming up a lot. And the word creator comes up in very fascinating ways. Nietzsche likes the word creator. He talks a lot about the creator. And he talks about you creating bigger than yourself. He talks a lot about the creator and creating. But what exactly that means? Now that's going to be very interesting. I have formed some opinions already. You will find Adolf Hitler, when I looked through Mein Kampf, you'll find Adolf Hitler using the word creator and the word God. But sometimes he's clearly referring to God as in the Christian sense, and he talks a lot about Christianity in Mein Kampf. But then he also talks about creator, the creator. And I got to tell you, I think that Adolf Hitler also, I don't think Adolf Hitler was a pure Christian. The Christians are obsessed now with trying to prove that Adolf Hitler was a Christian. I don't think that's a full analysis of Adolf Hitler. I think that he accepted Christianity and accepted and supported Christians, but I think he was moving on beyond Christianity. In the same way that Nietzsche had already laid those foundations. I would almost say that I think Ben Classen could get a place up there that is equivalent to that of Nietzsche. That Ben Classen went on a mission. He went on Mission Impossible, which was to create a religion from scratch, created immediately. And he did a phenomenal work. And his logic and reason for it is very sound. He's saying that all great civilizations that existed, all great civilizations that existed were bound by a religion. That people need to be bound together. So this means that people need to have some kind of common thinking that starts coming through. And I think already in this age with the internet, that is already happening already now. Because as we are reaching out to each other and as we are digging into what's gone wrong, we've got Christians who've realized the Jewish problem. We've got all kinds of things that people have realized and people are thinking about these things. And we are starting to reach new conclusions and starting to say, okay, if that's what caused it, what's the answer? And already there's a lot of thinking and talking and talking. And we are going in a direction of our own, one that wasn't planned by our masters, okay? Our masters who like to plan our thinking for us. There are lots of lines of thinking that are now coming out from common whites who are seeing things and reaching conclusions. And of course, there are many who look at paganism and they like paganism. My problem is I've never really spent the time digging into paganism. And I probably would like a lot of things in it, but I'd need to spend the time. So the one thing that I have come across that I really liked was Ben Klassen's stuff. I've really liked it. And I want to do some special videos about things that Ben Klassen wrote about. So part of my reason for talking about Ben is to just lay some groundwork for you. Because there is some common groundwork that comes out of this. And it's not just Ben Klassen that has raised these issues. Ben Klassen regarded the Roman Empire as the most important and successful creation of white people ever in their history. He regarded the Roman Empire as the greatest thing that we had. So he regarded the Roman Empire as great and also the ancient Greeks as great. Those are the two high points of our past. But of the two, he takes the Romans as the model for us. The Roman model is the model we should be using. Now, Adolf Hitler also had a similar view of the Romans and the Greeks, but it was just slightly different. Hitler said that the ancient Greeks were the epitome, they were the peak of all white achievement. The ancient Greeks were the epitome of our achievement. And then the Romans are the second most important. Although Hitler modeled the German state and the eagle and those things on the Romans, the Waffen-SS, the SS itself was a type of Praetorian guard based on the Romans. And in my video, The Two Emperors of the White Race, I brought up Napoleon, and that Napoleon also modeled things on the Roman model. Those eagles again. The eagle comes into play a lot. So these are examples of whites in later years looking back into the past and saying, who should we follow? Who had the best direction? And so often, even in the case of the United States, the focus falls on Rome, the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire is the greatest thing we ever had. But when it comes to intellectual achievement, the ancient Greeks are in a class of their own. The ancient Greeks had a science and mathematics that the Romans somehow didn't quite match. Though the Romans were excellent in so many ways, but the Romans managed in practical terms to create a physical thing, a physical state. And this state was unbelievably powerful. And it's the greatest creation of white people. The other thing you must remember about the ancient Greeks is that the ancient Greeks were not many people. They had a tiny population, whereas in the time of Rome, Rome was the first city in the world that had a million people in it. And that in itself was a great achievement, because it was a real engineering achievement to be able to get so many people to be able to live in such a small place. But the ancient Greeks didn't have big populations. Their populations were tiny by comparison. Yet they came up with such excellent thinking and such clear thought and wonderful achievement, some of which was used for hundreds of years thereafter. So Adolf Hitler is quite right in pointing at this small group of people, these Greeks, this tiny little community, and yet this tiny little community had an unbelievable impact on the world. And of course, out of this came Alexander the Great, who then blasted across and conquered and smashed the Persian Empire, which at that point was a multiracial empire. And he smashed it. And that is one of the greatest events in our ancient history. And even that way that the Greeks survived their invasion by the Persian superpower, even those things are really well worth looking at closely, because those Greeks should not have survived that. They should not have survived that, but they did. And how they did it, and the genius and the thinking behind it, how they worked it out, and how they worked together. They had been broken up into various states, but on that occasion, when they were all threatened, they worked together. But the single greatest thing that came out of ancient times, the single greatest political structure, physical structure, what I could call a national structure, was the Roman Empire. And Ben Clarkson admired it so much that he even said that we should speak Latin again, that Latin should be our language. That was how impressed he was with the Romans. And he believed that we should focus everything on the Romans as our basis. Now, scientists, when scientists have studied history and historians have looked at history, they talk about the collapse of Rome, then they talk about the Dark Ages, and then they talk about the Renaissance. Now, what many Christians tend to forget is that there was a time in our history when we forgot about the Romans and the Greeks. There was a time when for 1,000 years, we didn't have the detailed knowledge of the Romans and the Greeks. We actually lost our ancient history. We lost our ancient history. We didn't even know they existed. We didn't have their writings. It was gone. And that was at the time of Christianity. And Christianity was at its peak in those dark ages. The Dark Ages, as called by scientists, is actually the time when Christianity was at its peak. And that was the Roman Catholic Church. And that was 1,000 years. And there, knowledge was controlled. Knowledge was controlled by the church. And the church also was more powerful than the kings. Now, there are those who say, and Gibbons is one of them. Gibbons was one of the first modern historians. And Gibbons says that the Roman Empire's collapse was a direct result of Christianity. So I do want to go back to Christianity and Rome and those sorts of things to see how was it that Christianity came to be our religion and what exactly happened back then. What was going on? And Christians like to say, well, you know, the Romans were terrible. The Romans were throwing them all to the lions and everything. And I've come across references that that may have been a type of Holocaust type of talk that wasn't really real. That it was very minor what happened there. That in fact the Romans were actually not as nasty as you think they were. The Christians like to portray the Romans in a bad light and the pagans in a bad light. But when you go and start actually studying it, you'll see some very interesting things. And one of the things I've got are the values of the Romans. The Romans had some very interesting values. Even here in South Africa, our law system is called the Roman Dutch, law system. So our law system as it stands, the law of South Africa, is based in part on the Roman law from the Roman Empire. So the Romans brought many things to us that have helped us ever since, and lots of things are modeled on the Roman model. All modern armies are modeled on the Roman model. So Ben Clausen had a tremendous respect for the Romans. Now I just want to read a couple of pages out of Nature's Eternal Religion, just to give you a little bit of Ben Clausen's thinking. So the dedication in 1973 reads, "Dedicated to my people," in capital letters. "The noble white race, the finest creation in nature's realm. May this book be an inspiration to unite the white race, to find its racial soul and propel it forward to the manifest destiny decreed by nature herself. In so doing, may it expand, advance, and populate all the good lands of this planet Earth." I think the only thing I'd say about Ben Clausen here is, Ben, you did not include the planets that we are still going to inhabit. We are going to inhabit other planets other than the Earth, because we are very capable of it. So let's read the foreword. The foreword says, "The principles and creeds set forth in this book constitute the articles of faith of the Church of the Creator." So now, just notice, he's using the term creator. Adolf Hitler used the term creator. Sometimes Adolf Hitler was indicating God, but other times he would suddenly just say the creator and stuff like that. And I think Adolf Hitler had a lot of knowledge and a lot of thoughts. And that term of creator already comes from Nietzsche. Nietzsche was talking about creating. But he wasn't talking about God. He was talking about us people creating. Now, Nietzsche didn't talk specifically about the white race, but he lived in Europe. And so that was no doubt the people that he regarded as humans. And that is what he was focused on. But Nietzsche was talking about creating and creating beyond yourself. So here you will find this term of the creator. And so be aware of this term creator, that when they use the term creator, they're not necessarily meaning God. So he continues, "Our beliefs are strongly reinforced by an overwhelming mass of substantiated evidence. They are based on the eternal laws of nature. They are based on the lessons and experience of history. Furthermore, they are based on logic, common sense, and reality, not myth and fantasy. No other religion can honestly make this claim. We therefore believe that in 6,000 years of recorded history, this book is the most profound and meaningful religious book ever written for the survival of the white race. It is a fundamental creed based on the eternal laws of nature for the survival, expansion, and advancement of the white race, the noblest creation in nature's realm. We are confident that the white race will soon return to the reality, embrace our powerful new religion, regain control of its own destiny, and advance forward to new heights never before dreamed of. It is towards this noble objective, the survival, expansion, and advancement of the white race, that this book is dedicated. It is for this reason our dynamic new religion was founded. We call our religion creativity, and members thereof creators. Because we believe these words, in essence, best describe the characteristic soul of the white race." There's a documentary about the Romans that comes from Italy, I think. And in there, they made some interesting statements at the beginning of it. They said that not only was the Roman army a thing that could destroy, but the Romans could also create. And they created fantastic things. And this is true. The Roman army probably was the army with the most number of engineers and artisans in it of any army that's ever existed. The Roman army was not a dumb army. The Roman army was one of the cleverest armies that ever existed, where the soldiers who were in the army had high levels of knowledge. So it's a case of combining the warrior with knowledge. So you combine the warrior with scientific knowledge, engineering knowledge. So it all comes together in one thing. So the army doesn't just go and face the enemy and fight the enemy. That army can build. The Roman army would build all the time. And when they were on campaign, they would build forts for themselves. Every day they'd build a little fort. Every day. They would go and cut down trees. They'd build themselves a little fort. And that's where they'd sleep for the night. That is how they operated. The Roman army was the most intelligent army probably that ever existed. And so you had strong white men with good brains working together as a team. They were strong and they were clever and they were determined and they were problem solvers. That is what the Roman army was. So Ben Klassen continues. We completely reject the Judeo-democratic Marxist values of today and supplant them with new and basic values of which race is the foundation. We take a new revolutionary and dynamic approach to the problems that face the white race today in its desperate struggle for survival. So in 73 already, decades ago, he was already seeing that we are busy going downhill. And how much further have we gone downhill since then, hey? Although our religion is new, the laws embodied in our religion are not new, nor are they something we have invented. On the contrary, we have only observed and put into words that which nature in her eternal wisdom has decreed for the survival of all her creatures from the beginning of time. So if you believe that God is nature or that nature is a reflection of God, then that would be another way of looking at this thing. But the bottom line here is that he's looking at natural things, just like Adolf Hitler was. Adolf Hitler looked at nature and the world around him. So all he's saying is that he's looking at nature and how things have worked since the beginning of time. He continues, nor is it at all remarkable that we should have observed these laws and based our religion on them. What is most strange is that the creative white race has not done so centuries ago. In fact, it is amazing that the Romans and the Greeks failed to do so in their time. So there he's already mentioning the Romans and the Greeks. They are the key. But even they had not figured out religion like this. Going back even further, it is hard to understand why the highly gifted Egyptians failed to do so in their great white civilization 5,000 years ago. So let me pause there. Some of you may be shocked when I say the great Egyptians, who were a white civilization 5,000 years ago. I bet you've never heard that. Many have never heard that. You've heard all these claims that the Egyptians were black, but we'll get to that topic. So here he's saying the Egyptians originally were white people, and they were awesome white people. We're talking 5,000 years ago. Had the white race done so in its earlier history, it would not now be trapped in the idiotic and precarious struggle for survival in which it now finds itself ensnared. We can't say anything better than that. The whole survival issue is now even more idiotic and more precarious than before. He continues, we believe that reality is more important than believing. In the unsubstantiated ramblings of a wild and overstimulated imagination. See, he's not a fan of Christianity. But let's continue. We believe that facts substantiated by massive evidence are 1,000 times more valid and meaningful than supernatural claims that not only are unsubstantiated, but fly in the face of reason. We refuse to accept on faith ludicrous claims that repudiate historical evidence, geological evidence, scientific evidence, and fallacious claims that repudiate every other kind of evidence. We believe that evidence and judgment are basic in forming conclusions and decisions in all the vital matters pertaining to our lives. We believe a religion that is detrimental to the survival of a race is a bad religion. A religion that helps a race to survive, expand, and advance is a good religion for that race. Our creed is such a religion, and will have the most profound and far-reaching implications for the benefit and welfare of the white race. It is not our intention to make the white race less religious. On the contrary, it is our intention to have the white race become much more strongly devoted to religion than it is today. But above all, it is our objective to give the white race a far superior religion than the self-destructive, suicidal religion with which it is now burdened. See, this is a reference to Christianity. We believe that the highest law of nature is the right of any species to survival, expansion, and advancement of its own kind. We deem that for the white race, the right to survival, expansion, and advancement of its own people is not only the highest law of nature, but also the foundation of our religious creed. It is overwhelmingly clear that unless the white race in this generation changes the suicidal course on which it is now embarked, it will miserably perish from the face of the earth, overrun and inundated by a flood tide of colored mongrels. We are confident that in the near future, the white race will rally, unite, and embrace the creativity program for its own survival. Furthermore, we are convinced that if only 1/10 of the time, energy, and money were spent in propagating our dynamic new religion, as is spent on keeping alive the sick and morbid religions now undermining our race, that creativity would spread like wildfire. We mean to organize our good people and expend that energy and more. United and organized, the white race is 10 times more powerful than the rest of the world put together. Now you're talking. I will reread that. United and organized, the white race is 10 times more powerful than the rest of the world put together. And that remains absolutely true to this day. In fact, even the notion of being 10 times more powerful, I think from a military point of view, I really got to tell you, I don't think that we are just 10 times more powerful. We are way more powerful. I've seen a lot of the other side, and I got to tell you, I really think we are way more powerful. That even this 10 times thing is not truly a reflection of what we are capable of. We predict that our religion, creativity, will be the supreme religion of the future. We predict that it not only spread to all corners of the earth, but will eventually supplant all other religions, barring none. We believe that such is inevitable. The W in our insignia stands for the noble white race. The crown represents our unconditional right to supremacy in nature's realm. The halo signifies purity of blood, and that we jealously regard our bloodlines as the holiest value on the face of the earth. So that's the end of the foreword to Nature's Eternal Religion. See, Ben Clarkson was only interested in science and history, and what can we learn from that? And he excluded everything else. What can we say that we've learned from 6,000 years of written history? What can we say that we've learned from our science, much of which has only come into being since the Renaissance? And the Renaissance was when we rediscovered our knowledge of Rome and Greece. the Renaissance that caused our modern civilization to expand forward only took place when we relearned and reobtained and reread the knowledge of Rome and Greece. And that is another thing you must think about when you think about the effect of Christianity in that period of time. Between the fall of Rome in about 400 AD, sometime after that, and about 1,400 years later, when we rediscovered our old knowledge, that we were, in this period of time, not moving forward much scientifically at all. And that we've leapt forward ever since we started looking at the Romans and the Greeks. And it's a horrifying fact when you consider that the mere fact that we lost our knowledge of previous greatness, that this hobbled us as a race across Europe for 1,000 years. Now, some people want to go and blame the Roman Catholics. And Christians are quick to start blaming each other's different sects and so forth. But you need to sit and think about these things. You need to sit and think about these things. So what Ben Clausen has done, which is utterly unique, he's not gone and revived the pagan religions. He's not looked at any other thing. He's gone right back to the drawing board, looked at our knowledge of history and science, taken history and science and said, what are we going to do with this and how can this work for white people? And that, I think, is a truly unique accomplishment of Ben Clausen. And so he called the leader of this church, the head of this church. He took a poke at the Pope. And the leader of the church is called the Pontifex Maximus, which is Latin. Now, if we go and look it up, it says the following. This is actually a Roman term. And this is what it meant. Pontifex Maximus. The Pontifex Maximus. And in Latin, this means the greatest pontiff or greatest bridge builder, was the high priest of the College of Pontiffs in ancient Rome. This was the most important position in the ancient Roman religion, open only to patricians until 254 BC, when a plebeian first occupied this post. A distinctly religious office under the early Roman Republic, it gradually became politicized until, beginning with Augustus, it was subsumed into the imperial office. So Pontifex Maximus was really the name of the high priest of the College of Pontiffs in ancient Rome. Now the Romans are very interesting people. And Christians, in my view, at least the Christians I've been running into, lots of these Christians, especially in South Africa, don't seem to have a knowledge of the white race's history before Christianity. And that's actually what I want us to get into, starting with this bit from Ben Clausen. Because we need to look a little bit earlier at these people, not through Christian views, but through what we can ascertain from history. Now, the Romans were actually a very religious society. They might not have been Christian, but they were very religious. And the Romans also had a tolerance for other religions. Christianity has actually been a monopoly in the white race, but the Romans were very tolerant. So remember, the Greeks and the Romans also had their democracy, but their democracy is another thing. We'll get back to their democracy. But the Romans were very tolerant in many ways. And not only did they have a democratic system, but they also had a system of freedom of religion. The Romans at one time had something like 160 religions in the Roman Empire. And you could believe in any one of these religions. And I like that idea. If we're going to allow free speech among ourselves, and I think that's a given. Free speech is a white race thing, and it primarily comes to us from the United States, which was created by white people from Europe. So they based a lot of their ideas on the Romans, actually. So free speech, where all of us can give our views, that is something that I'm a big supporter of. But at the same time, I'm a supporter of freedom of religion. I like the idea that whites can have multiple religions to choose from, and let whites choose which religion they want, and let those whites live in tolerance of each other and accept that each can have a different religion, and that's fine. I like this particular religion a lot because of the various things that it aims at. And I think this religion is unique because he's not based it on anything spiritual at all. He's based it on history and science. And he's basically given people a direction. And the Romans were very, very religious. Very religious. The guy who wrote the foreword to my book, Jeff Nyquist, he and I parted company later over the issue of the Jews. But Jeff Nyquist was very familiar with Nietzsche, and he was also very, very familiar with the Romans and the ancients. And Jeff Nyquist said to me that the Romans were exceptionally conservative as a society. And this is very important. The Romans were extremely conservative as a society and very religious, and they made sure that they kept their values together and that they imbued their next generation with their values. And Jeff Nyquist attributed the success of the Roman Empire to the fact that they were conservative. They defended their values. And as you will see under the modern system, you'll see our values are being torn to shreds. Everything is being ripped apart, including our history, including our value systems. Everything about us just being ripped up. Now, the Romans didn't tolerate that kind of thing. The Romans were a people who were very religious, and they kept to their traditions. And those traditions are very important. And this is how they held themselves together as a great, great empire for hundreds of years. Though we're going to go and dig into the other ancient empires, which were white as well, which existed thousands of years beforehand. Now, one of the things that I've noticed lots of Christians saying is Christians say, oh, well, you know, whites were savages. Whites were these pagan savages, evil dogs. And then Christianity came and made us good. But if you go and read actual history and what those values of those people were, then you will have to question some of that Christian interpretation. Because when you read their actual writings, you'll see it's not quite what the Christians claim. So even the Christians need to go and look at what we actually know about those religions. So I want us to take a little bit of a detour and look into ancient times, pre-Christian times, and actually look at whites and what their value systems were and what they achieved, because most whites aren't really aware of the things that they have achieved in the past, and they tend to only think, and this is especially true in South Africa, the whites here only tend to think in Christian terms. They don't even consider the Romans and the ones before then. And they just take the Christian interpretation as given to them by their preachers and their fellow Christians, that whites were evil savages in the ancient times, that Christianity made us good, and that now we are good people, but previously we were always bad people. But we were very successful people in ancient times. What exactly were the values that brought us that success? And nowadays, we might say, well, you know, we can beat the blacks because we've got all this technology which and industry which the blacks might not have. But back then, when we didn't have all that science and technology, how did we then compete? And the people we competed against were either other whites or other races who were very successful in their own right. So how did we manage to compete when the odds were really tough? And that is why I want to go and look back into past times. But Adolf Hitler considered the Romans and the Greeks as the two high points of our ancient life. And even the scientists and the historians, nobody questions that, that indeed those were two of our greatest high points that we know of. But we had other awesome high points too. But those are the ones we can base our thoughts on. And so Ben Clausen was very interested in the Romans, and Adolf Hitler too, in the Romans and the Greeks. What can we learn from the Romans and the Greeks? Because the Romans and the Greeks had very different attitudes to us these days. And there are, look, lots of our values and laws come from them. So like I said, you know, here we are with Roman Dutch law in South Africa. Much of the law of the Western world is based in one way or another on the Roman law. So those are things we got from them. They were law-abiding people. They created laws and political structures that we are still copying. Democracy is a copy of them. The Senate and voting and all those things, those are things that those people did. But still, those people had a different attitude and a tougher attitude. And why is that different from our attitude? And what will be very interesting to look at a point will be to see where the Christians, the early Christians and the Romans of those days, where they clashed with each other. What were the clashes? What were the clashes? But I think Ben Clausen's creation is unique. This religion that he's created. So it's not just mumbo jumbo. This is based on history and science. And when we look at some parts of what he's written, you'll see he's written things very clearly. You will not be able to easily differ with his conclusions on certain things. So even though the current leader of the church is a guy in Britain, his name is James Mack, and he is the current Pontifex Maximus, I think. So even though the title Pontifex Maximus was for whoever's running the church at the time, I do like to think of Ben Clausen a little bit more special, and maybe they have a term for him that I don't know about, but I like to think of Ben Clausen as the Pope of the white race, because I think he really created something truly unique. And whereas Dr. William Pierce went out to create a similar type of religion, I think it's Ben Clausen's religion that's the one that's got more momentum. It's still small, I think, but it's out there and they work away at it. And in the United States, in 2009, they got the status of an actual religion. So whereas Dr. Pierce's religion seems to have died with him and it didn't go much further than him, this religion is now actually acknowledged as a proper religion. So in the United States, you can give your donations and claim back on your taxes. Yeah, I'm serious. You can donate to this religion. This is the only white religion that is actually recognized as a religion, and it's there in the United States. And I'm not sure about its status in other countries, but it now has a branch in Britain. And that's a good sign, because the British are seriously in need of some help there, because their minds really need some assistance. I think they've been so messed about with certain infiltrators that there's a lot of stuff that they've forgotten about themselves. But I like Ben Clausen, so it's my little thought. I like to think of him as the Pope of our race, Ben Clausen, the Pontifex Maximus. And it says, Founder, Church of the Creator. But creativity as a concept, saying that white people are a creative people, that is a very valid concept. The Germans were talking about that about themselves. White people love creating things. We like doing things, working at things, building things, creating things. It's a very natural thing. But the whole thing is about our position. And this is where Nietzsche comes back again. Nietzsche comes back yet again to haunt us. Nietzsche back then was already talking against the notion that all people are equal. Back in the 1880s, Nietzsche was saying that all people are not equal. And he even predicted that there would be wars fought in the future over this very thing. And I got to tell you, I think this is just as natural as can be. That we will tell other people, listen, we think that we are better than you at this and this. And therefore, we want to negotiate with you on this basis. And those other people will say, no, we totally disagree with you. No, we cannot let you have that. You are not of that position that you say that you are. You are not in any way superior to us. Therefore, we reject that outright. And the only way that this is going to be sorted out is by physical combat. In the end, it's going to come down to that. And I think that those views of Nietzsche, where he predicted those things, he's way ahead of his time. How many wars are based over the issue of who is superior to whom, or should we be equals, or whatever? So many wars are waged over that thing. But it is important for the Jews. It is a part of the creed of the Jews that they have to push this business of equality. That is a key thing for the Jews. The Jews do that. And the Jews push that thing all the time. And they have to. And the reason they have to is because they found themselves in the past wanting. They've been found that in Europe, whites have said to them, you shouldn't be here. They've been chucked out 109 times. Therefore, they know that at some point, whites will find that they don't want the Jews around. And so the Jews have to keep coming back with this equality in order to muddy the waters. Jewish deflection. But yeah, Church of the Creator and Ben Clausen, and he's dedicated it to the white race. But the key thing here is that he was trying to come up with a set of values that we can strive for and that will keep us together. And in other places, he talks about the differences between whites and that these differences need to be forgotten. We have to bridge these gaps. We all have to work together as a race. We as a race are targeted. White people are the only race in the world that is legally discriminated against. That you can legally discriminate against them and take away their stuff and it's fine and it's regarded as good. That is how the values have changed. And there's also another reason that relates to this type of thinking, which will bring us back to Nietzsche. Nietzsche also started looking at morality and those kinds of things, and he talked about all those sorts of things. But Nietzsche had the idea of two kinds of morality. He spoke about master morality and slave morality. And from what I can understand, master morality is actually the type of thing that the Romans and Greeks did. In other words, they had a morality which elevated themselves. They would look at the things that they did and they would say, yay, those are awesome things, and they elevate themselves. They are in praise of their achievements. But slave morality is a different kind of a thing. And that is Christian type morality, is the slave morality. I've even pointed it out to members of my family who are deeply Christian. I've got deeply Christian members of my family. So many of them are Christians. And there's one member of my family whose wife and daughter are pastors. The daughter's going to become a pastor too. And I've tried to speak to them about these things, but they don't want to know. But I'll tell you what I said to this member of my family. I said to my family member that you must look at some of the things of Christianity, what it's trying to teach you in certain respects. Like, Christianity is a full guilt trip. And it's a tremendous guilt trip. I realized this even in the days when I was of a Buddhist outlook. Even then, with my Buddhist type outlook, I began to look at that and I said to myself, you know, this thing is based on guilt. And I said to myself, you know, if I do something and I maybe hurt somebody, then there's guilt. But if I don't do anything, then I don't have guilt. So in other words, it is better for me in this world. I can move on to higher realms by doing nothing in this world. If I do nothing, then I get to move onwards in the afterlife. And that was from my type of Buddhist type of stuff that I believed. And that all applies to Christianity, because the guilt trip was in this other thing as well. This thing of you must be careful how you treat other people. So that guilt trip, I noticed it myself. I said to myself, you know, by my own values, I can't do this and I can't do that. But look at those black communists. They can do all kinds of things and it's quite fine. They don't have any moral hang-ups. And this is where Nietzsche was coming into this master and slave morality. And when you look at Christianity, for example, I said the following thing to my family member. I said to him, the one day he was talking to me about somebody who'd cheated him out of a lot of money. It was something that he'd done. He had built something and he'd lent it to a family member. That person went on to use this thing to make money, but that person was not paying him for this thing that he took from him, this physical thing that he'd built, this device. And he was saying, oh, you know, look at how he treated me. And then later somebody died and he was cheated out of something that he should have got in the will. And he was unhappy over that. And I almost sensed a pleasure in the fact that he could say that he was wronged. I almost sensed a pleasure in that. Because I said to him, listen, that person's cheated you. That person has cheated you. I will help you. Let's go to court. I will help you. I will be in court with you. Let's go and take that person on and take that person to task. And he wasn't interested. And I eventually walked away with the view that my family member, being deeply religious, was actually feeling quite pleased that he'd been cheated. Because now something's been wronged against him. And I said to him, you know, that religion is teaching you that if you lose, that you're a winner. So the more you lose, the more you're winning. It's teaching you that if you lose in this life, you're going to be an awesome winner in the next life. So if you suffer, then you will do well in your next life. You will gain points for your next life. So if you suffer, if people steal from you, if people maltreat you, and you take all of this without striking back, using violence, using force, using legal methods, you know, win the court case, expropriate his house, have his house attached, sell his house so that you can get his money, the money that he owes you. You know, if you meekly allow yourself to be beaten all the time, then your religion is telling you, the more you are beaten, the more you are suffering, the more you are losing. Basically, the more you are losing, the more you are losing in this life, the greater are going to be your winnings in the afterlife. A Christian on my YouTube channel even said to me just a while ago, a week or two ago, said to me, you know, just remember that you may lose out on the eternal life and you will be the loser. He's referring to me. You will be the loser forever into eternity. Yeah, that indeed is the big catchphrase. That's the big catchphrase, that the outcome of this life, the end result of it will be eternal. Will be eternal. And either you get the eternal afterlife or you don't. So it's all based on this life. And the clincher is that argument about the eternal life. Do you really want to suffer forever? And that church which my family member belongs to is a church that's created in South Africa by a husband and wife, Afrikaans people. And that church has got churches in the United States. So it's a multiracial church created by whites in South Africa. It now has a multiracial following in the USA as well. So it's quite a big church. And I went to their church page, and their church page says that we believe that, you know, if you don't make it into heaven, that the alternative will be, it says this on the church page, the alternative will be that you will burn in a lake of fire forever. So burning in the lake of fire forever, that's your alternative. So that is what that church says. And my family member, I said to him, can't you see that your church is teaching you that the more you suffer here, the more you lose here, the bigger a winner you're going to be in the afterlife? But you are not assured that there is such a thing. And my family member was not very interested in what I had to say. But look, we all change, hey? We all change, and we must allow for that. And so everybody must be allowed to pick his kind of thinking at that time. Because we go through it. I went through it myself. I was a big advocate of the afterlife in my strange beliefs. And I'll actually tell you a story about my dad. My dad was a Christian like my mom. Also brought up in Afrikaans society, a Christian. And in the final days of my dad's life, in the last year or so of my dad's life, he was already not well and he was quite ill and psychologically was very unhappy. All sorts of things had gone wrong. He was not a happy person. And my dad and I weren't that close. But my dad had earlier in his life gone through various phases where he had been very religious, even to the point of being an adult man who gets baptized again, properly baptized, like I think in a river kind of a thing. So my dad had his ups and downs with religion, and he pretty much sort of believed in it, even if he wasn't a regular churchgoer, and at earlier times he'd been very keen as a believer. He'd been a good man, actually. When he was young and his father died, he looked after his mother. My dad wasn't a bad man at all. He tried to be good in his life. Later, alcohol got to him. But I will never forget this little discussion, because he and I didn't have many deep discussions. We weren't that close. But there was this one discussion that has come to mind, and I've thought about it a lot in recent months. One day, my dad was sitting in the lounge, and my dad suddenly said to me, you know what, when you are dead, you are dead. And back then, I was already onto my spiritual stuff, and I said, no, dad, there is a life after death. Dad, you will live after you're dead. My father got quite angry, and he said to me, when you are dead, you are dead. And me, I was still protesting. No, no, Dad, there's an afterlife. There's an afterlife, Dad. Dad, no, there is one for sure. And yeah, but now I think about it, and I think my dad already was preparing, knowing that he's going downhill, his health is going downhill, he's going to die, and he's pondering his coming death. He knows that in a few years' time, he's going to be dead. And so now he's thinking about his afterlife, and he's realized that, you know what, there ain't no afterlife. That when you die, you are going to be gone. And I was there when my dad died. I was very close by. It was quite a traumatic thing for me. For me, that became a traumatic event in my life. It was my first experience of somebody close who died. And that had a real effect on me when I was young. But it was good. All these things prepare you for other things. And you mustn't be negative about life. The good news for young people is this. You will learn from experience. There are things that will burn you. There are things where you will have high hopes and your high hopes will just be shattered to pieces. Life is uncompromising. You'll have these wonderful high hopes and they'll be dashed and shattered to pieces. And what you're going to have to learn is to pick up your life after things have been shattered. And that's why I like the Germans and Hitler so much. These were people who could take beating upon beating upon beating. And they would always just go and pick up the pieces. And when you get back to the Romans were the epitome of this kind of person. The Romans were a white people who under no conditions ever quit. They never quit. They only lost their willpower right at the end. Right at the end, the same time that Christianity started growing there. But before that, the Romans never, never quit, no matter what. They were the toughest whites. I regard them as among the toughest and definitely the most determined white people who ever lived. And we need to go and have a look at them and study them and see what it was. Because that is one of the things you've got to learn about life. When I was young, I used to think that things are, you want to strive for perfection. You want to get it right first time. But I would say that very luckily in my life, from an early age, from my teens onwards, all of everything went to hell. All my life, the life that I knew and that I was comfortable with, that whole life was shattered to pieces, and I found myself completely wallowing in circumstances that I did not want to be a part of. And life forced that on me. And I want to tell you that that was good. It was good. I started out where everything went wrong for me. When I was young, other young guys in South Africa that were in the military with me, they were happy in the military. I was unhappy in the military. They were falling in love and getting married and finding the girl of their dreams when they were young. And I was not in that space at all. I was busy trying to help other members of my family who were struggling. And I was struggling. And I'm actually glad that my life started out like that. That my adult life started out as a disaster. Because it did me good. Because based on that, I immediately found myself continuously wrestling with reality. Continuously wrestling with reality. And all these things coming at me that I never expected, that I never wanted, that I didn't want to be a part of. I rejected them all and I hated everything that was happening around me. But I had to learn to adapt to that. And with time, I learned to adapt to it. And then as time went by, I learned to master it. And I actually started enjoying it and I started winning at certain things. So I'm glad that my life was kind of shattered into pieces early on because it did me good and I had a firm grounding in reality. I came out of a house where I'd been protected and looked after, and the raw nastiness of life shattered a lot of things around me, and I had to learn to adapt. But by learning to adapt, it made me stronger, and it made me realize that, you know what, these bad things can work out for you. In fact, some of my best experiences later were things that were horrible, things that should have been nasty. I actually grew to derive pleasure out of the things where I had succeeded and things had gone right, when in fact everything had looked bad, where I'd taken bad situations and turned them around. And another thing, another little pearl of wisdom that I think is worth remembering. Napoleon, whom I admire so much, Napoleon, there's a quote of Napoleon where Napoleon talks about the rich and the poor. And this gives a, brings us back to this slave morality. Napoleon said, it's a good thing that there is religion. Otherwise, the poor would kill the rich. Napoleon said that. It's a good thing that there is religion. Otherwise, the poor would kill the rich. And that, to me, makes me think that that is also a reference to Christianity, and that Christianity allows the poor to take their suffering because they are told, oh, you are suffering. That is good. That is good. Don't worry. Don't worry. I know you're losing. You're losing. You've got one flat losing streak in this life. But don't worry. Don't worry. In the next life, you're going to have a total winning streak. Don't worry about the losing streak in this life. In your next life, it's just going to be a winning streak forever. And that, to me, is also a sign of the slave morality. And that people are taught that, no, it's good to suffer. And it comes through with the Afrikaners, the Boers. They are a patient people. They suffer, they move to new levels of suffering, and they continue to suffer. And they keep saying to themselves, God's going to come through for us. God's going to come through for us. God's going to come through for us. But some like me are a bit more skeptical. So that's a little bit of background to the Church of Creativity and Ben Klassen and why I hold them in high regard. And I also wanted you to just start getting a feel for why we need to look at the Romans and the Greeks especially. But I have another purpose. Before we get to those topics, we're going to dig into the ancient white civilizations. Because Ben Klassen actually had done some homework. In fact, the amount of homework that Ben Klassen did in putting together this stuff is really awesome. He really went and dug and dug and dug. And Ben Klassen was trying to find a formula that would make us turn into winners. He wants all of us to be winners. He only concerns himself with white people being winners. And he was trying to find the best formula. And he was thinking that this is a proven formula. We go and we have a common belief that binds us together and drives us towards a certain goal, certain goals that will make us succeed. And of course, that is about us working in unison. And there was something that I got from Matt Hale's mom. And Matt Hale, who got a 40-year jail sentence, Matt Hale was the Pontifex Maximus. He was the Pontifex Maximus of the Church of Creativity, and he was very good. And I think that is why he ended up where he ended up, was because he was too determined. And they have to watch out. As you can see, the SPLC and the Jews are watching this Church of Creativity. So you have to ask yourself, why are the Jews and the SPLC watching this religion so closely? And it's because it's such a kick-ass religion. I've looked at these things and I've thought about the consequences of people if people started adopting some of these ideas of this church, if people actually started becoming creators as per the Church of Creativity, I got to tell you, I think you'd see some very kick-ass people coming out of there, because it will focus your mind. But even so, everybody else can still take away valuable points out of this. There are lots of valuable ideas in here that whites need to start taking, and these things need to be absorbed, and they have to become a part of us. And we're going to get to some of these values. And I used some of the stuff in one of my previous videos where I gave some of his commandments, some of Ben's commandments for white people. And we can go through various of these things. But these things are very good. There is a lot in here that you can learn from this guy. This guy tried to bring out something that's going to make us win. And he wants us to win like the Roman Empire. Adolf Hitler wanted to win like the Roman Empire. That is what they were aiming for. We're not talking small stuff. We're talking big stuff. We're not even talking nations anymore. We're talking continents and our race as a whole. And in fact, our race, we can talk about continents that we do or do not want. That is the scale on which we can operate. It took everybody, it took the entire world and lots of dummies to stop the Germans. Otherwise, the Germans would have chewed up a huge portion of Russia, and Europe today would have been double or treble the size that it currently is. It's sickening that our European people have been squashed into such a small space. And you know, the European people used to have an empire. Their collective empires controlled almost every part of the world. Those little countries in Europe, between them, controlled almost every part of the world. Just a hundred or so years ago. So we are a race that are capable of a lot. But we need to get the kind of values and attitude that makes you a winner. And when I look at what Nietzsche put together, and what Ben Carson put together, and what Hitler was saying, those areas are very complementary. Nietzsche also said another thing. Nietzsche said, that which does not kill you makes you stronger. That which does not kill you makes you stronger. That is a definite thing in life. I've found it, and it's a very important part of life. So these people were thinking hard. Nietzsche was really way ahead of his time. He was way ahead of his time. He was truly brilliant. And we'll get back to Nietzsche. And some of these criticisms of Christianity, Christians should be listening to some of these criticisms of Christianity. One of the very possible outcomes that can happen with Christianity is that Christianity will continue mutating. And Christian identity may just be a part of a series of mutations to come. And it will be interesting to see what happens with Christianity. But that depends on Christians. Depends on Christians and how they view their religion. Nothing is static in this world. The world is dynamic, and it is a world of struggle. And we should be preparing ourselves for struggle. And we should be like the ancient whites, which means that we shouldn't sit and cry over these things. We should see this as nature in action. This is correct. Struggle is part of the thing. And I've always believed that I have a right to live. One thing that I've never gone and thought is that there's a moral reason for me to die. I've never accepted that there's any moral reason why I should die. I have as much right to live as everybody else. And all white people should be thinking like that. You have every bit as much right to live as anybody else on this planet. And we need to defend that value for ourselves. We need to be defending each other. We have a right to live. And none of the youngsters should be allowed to believe. We must kill off all this negativity that's coming at the kids and the young people. This nonsense must be got out of their heads. They must not be filled with loads of guilt. The guilt tripping is just a game. It's not real. Your mind can kill you. In Africa, there's some interesting stuff. The blacks believe in witchcraft, and they still do to this day. Even the Christian blacks still have got their witchcraft angles to them. They will regard witchcraft as superior to Christianity, even when they are Christians who go to church. Witchcraft is such a deep part of these blacks. But I'll tell you this. Under witchcraft, they found that there are times when blacks would believe that they're under a spell. And that black will come to the conclusion, because of various signs and things, he'll come to the conclusion that he's under a spell and he's going to die. And there have been times in Africa where doctors have gone and studied these blacks, and they've looked at them as these blacks now believe that they're under a spell. And that black will actually die. He will die. And there will be no medical reason for it. He will die, and he will believe that he's been bewitched and that it's game over for him. Nobody can save him. But it's all in the mind. It's all mental. The times when I dug into stuff like that, I came to the conclusion that it was all in the mind. He believed so strongly, and his belief actually physically killed him. He totally believed that there is no option. So the mind can be a dangerous thing. If it's filled with various poisons, those poisons can work against you, where you believe negative things about yourself. And psychological warfare is a very important part of life. And our enemies are inundating white people with psychological warfare. Don't even think twice about this. We are inundated with psychological warfare. It's coming at us all the time from the liberals and the Jews and the blacks and everybody. The whole white race is just inundated with this hate and this stuff that's meant to sap us of our will. But it's psychological warfare. It's not something that we can't defend against. You just need to know that this is junk, ignore it, and focus on reality. So that's it for today. Thank you very much for listening. We will start digging into this thing of nature's greatest miracle, the white race. And that is what Ben Klassen believed. And I agree with him. So we'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.